You're listening to an event from the U.S. Institute of Peace, part of the USIP Podcast Network. For more information on any of the topics you hear today, or to learn more about our work around the world, visit usip.org and check us out on social media.
Good morning, everyone. Sorry for a little bit of our late start. There still are people coming in through security, but we figured we would get started, especially for those who are tuning in online. So thank you for coming to our talk today on Bridging the Data Policy Gap on Counterterrorism. My name is Leanne Erdberg. I am the director of our Countering Violent Extremism Program here at the U.S. Institute of Peace. For those of you who don't know about USIP, we were founded by the Congress in 1984 as an independent, nonpartisan American institution dedicated to the proposition that a world without violent conflict is possible, it's practical, and it's essential for global security. Today, we welcome you to this event at the George H.W. Bush Peace Education Center. Like all Americans, last week we mourned the loss of America's 41st president. Here at USIP, in this Bush building, we have the honor of reflecting on his skill at finding compromise amid conflict and the leadership that he offered our nation during our nation and the world during a period of international turmoil and historic change. He was a great supporter of our mission and our nation's ability to wage peace. And in that vein, we pursue our work all over the world waging peace. USIP believes in a vision of a world without violent conflict, and we practice that belief by working on the ground with local partners to provide tools and knowledge and training to manage conflict so it doesn't become violent and resolve it when it does. When it comes to countering violent extremism, we operate along a few different lines. The first is we house the Resolve Network Secretariat. Resolve stands for Researching Solutions to Violent Extremism, because we believe deeply that research helps us advance a deeper, more nuanced understanding of local factors relating to violent extremism and local sources of resilience. Second, we practice in the field to test what works and what doesn't. We apply peace-building and conflict transformation approaches and tools to transform attitudes and relationships and structural factors that are associated with violent extremism. And third, we use this practical knowledge as well as the research and analysis to work with policymakers and other professionals to respond to some of the most critical global challenges of our time. A key aspect of our work is to convene people around challenging and important topics like today's, and we help ensure that many viewpoints are uncovered and combined to come up with innovative solutions. So our forum today is an extension of this important work. It's why we are delighted to be showcasing the release of the 6th Annual Global Terrorism Index as produced by the Institute for Economics and Peace and built upon the database housed at University of Maryland START Consortium. This is the 5th forum that we've had the pleasure of hosting here at USIP and allowing us to dig deeper into the data presented in the annual index. We're looking forward to another great discussion today. As the report shows, efforts to address terrorism are happening against the landscape of profound vulnerabilities facing governments and communities in fragile states. When I say fragile, I'm referring to the absence or breakdown of a social contract between people and their government, and fragility, when mixed with violent extremism, continues to challenge stability, security, capacity, and resilience. In part, that's why the Congress has charged the U.S. Institute of Peace, an independent leader in reducing and preventing conflict, with convening the Task Force on Extremism in Fragile States. The bipartisan initiative will recommend early next year a comprehensive approach for U.S. policy to prevent the underlying causes of extremism in fragile states in the Sahel, the Horn of Africa, and the Near East that complements and builds on proposed and existing U.S. programs and international partnerships. If you haven't already read the interim report from the task force, we have copies of it available here, and it's also available online. From where we stand today, any strategy for success must explicitly go beyond fighting today's terrorists and do more to prevent tomorrow's young people from ever joining in the first place. So how does trend data help us do that? How do we bridge the data policy divide? We have an expert panel that's going to help us untangle that. There is biographical information for each of the panelists in your handouts, and so I won't go into too much detail for each of our participants, but you will see their wealth of experience and knowledge showcased today. I'm going to quickly run through our agenda. We're going to start with presentations, then we're going to switch to a panel discussion, and then we're going to have audience question and answers. So I'd now like to introduce Michelle Breslauer, Director of the Americas Program for the Institute for Economics and Peace, to provide an overview of the report's findings. Please join me in welcoming Michelle.
Excuse me. Excellent. Well, thank you for having me here today. And thank you to USIP for hosting, as Leanne mentioned, the fifth time that we're doing this in conjunction with USIP here in Washington, D.C. I work up in New York, and my colleague Lori Smolensky is here with me as well. So if you have questions about this report or the work that we do, feel free to talk to one of us after the panel. I'm here on behalf of the Institute for Economics and Peace, and we are a not-for-profit, nonpartisan, independent think tank. We produce metrics to measure peacefulness, to try to understand the drivers of peaceful societies, and to try to understand the economic benefit that reductions in violence can bring to the economy. So while our major research output each year is the Global Peace Index, which is a measure of peacefulness across 163 countries and territories around the world, one indicator of that index is the Global Terrorism Index. So we build that in as an indicator. Now, this is the sixth year of the GTI. We are looking here at 163 countries, and we're looking at the relative impact of terrorism. So I'll describe in a moment how we build that index to try to capture how terrorism impacts multiple areas of society. I mentioned that we use it as an indicator for the Global Peace Index, and it's developed by our organization, the Institute for Economics and Peace, and we have an advisory panel that's there. So looking at how we build this index, measuring something like terrorism is quite difficult. We rely on the world's preeminent database of terrorist activity. That's the Global Terrorism Database at the START Center, and we have the manager and builder of that database here, so I'll let Aaron talk about the definitions used for coding terrorist attacks and how all of that information is put together. But this is really the largest source of terrorism data. So we start with the data, right? And then what are we doing to try to build this index? Well, we're trying to look at the different impacts of terrorism on society. So we take incidents, injuries, deaths, and property damage into account, and those have a different weighting or impact on the actual index. Then we look at the scores over 5 years to try to measure the longer-term impact of terrorism and try to account for some of the psychological impact of terrorism on society. So what we're doing is that a terrorist attack that happens in 2017 is going to have the strongest result in the score for 2017, but the indices afterwards for 2018, 2019, 2020 are still going to reflect some amount of impact from that attack. Then we band the scores. And what does that mean? What we're trying to do is even out some of the fact that violence tends to become normalized in society. So if you have a terrorist attack once a year, it's going to have a different impact in society than if you have 100 terrorist attacks a year. So these are some of the methodological models that we're using to try to bring together a slightly more nuanced idea of the impact of terrorism in a society when we're working with a data-driven project. And then finally, we examine all of the socioeconomic data that we have against these scores and try to understand what correlates in terms of the environments that lead to higher levels of terrorism. Where am I pointing this towards? There. Okay. Excuse me. So This is an overall chart looking at 1998 to 2017. So the index that we just published last week represents 2017. And the major headline for this year is that deaths from terrorism declined by 27% in 2017, so from 2016 to 2017, and 44% since the peak of deaths in 2014. This was because we saw 94 countries whose scores improved versus 46 that deteriorated. But terrorism is still a global phenomenon, so 67 countries suffered more than one death, and 5 countries recorded more than 1,000 deaths, 19 countries recorded more than 100 deaths. We saw terrorism in Europe, Western Europe, fall by 75% in that one-year period. However, far-right political terrorism is on the rise in Western Europe and North America. And 99% of terrorism deaths happen in countries that are engaged in violent conflict or those that have high levels of political terror, that practice state terror. So those are some of the key headlines from this year. And what you see on this chart is tracking some of these trends in terrorism, where you see a massive increase after the start of ISIL. And then we've seen after the military interventions in Nigeria and Iraq, a decrease in deaths from terrorism.